Hello, and welcome to another episode of Reason Town. I'm your host, Jared Forsyth, and I'm here with Millie McDonald, all the way from Australia.
Hello.
Welcome, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
This episode is sponsored by TylerMcGinnis.com, which provides tools for learning front-end frameworks, React, things like that. Also, did a Reason boot camp a couple weeks ago, if you're looking to get up to speed. So, Millie, you gave a talk a couple of weeks ago at ForwardJS about JavaScript, Reason, TypeScript, and we'll get into that in a bit. But first, could you just tell us what about your programming background?
Sure. I've actually only been out of uni for a year and a half now. I did a Bachelor of Engineering at the University of Queensland, software, did honours, all that. And to graduate, I had to do some work experience. So at the time, looked through job listings, etc., saw a QA internship position from what is now Tiny, and applied, got in. So I started at Tiny as a QA intern, which a lot of people would think would be just pressing buttons, following instructions, all that kind of thing.
Sure.
But I actually got the opportunity very early on to start working on code, because Tiny writes, pretty much if we can write our own version of something, we do. So we have a lot of test frameworks, automated test frameworks, all that kind of thing that we've actually written ourselves and we use in-house. Mm-hmm. And I got to start working on maintaining and upgrading and all that for those. So I was QA intern for a year. I then went to QA engineer when I graduated for 6 months, where I did a bit more work on the automation frameworks. And then just over a year ago, I got moved into the editor team. So Tiny makes rich text editors. So think like Microsoft Word or Google Docs or that kind of thing. But we make an editor that you can embed in your own web page. Instead of being locked into using whatever website we point you at, developers can just take it, put it in their web page, and use it however they like.
And to be clear, so Tiny, the product Tiny MCE is like the OG
yes.
of, embed in your website text editors, right? Like,
yeah, it's quite old, older than jQuery, and it's been used by WordPress for years. It's open source, but it's used by a lot of people.
Yeah. So like these days, there are a bunch of options. There's ProseMirror and there's Quill and, there's DraftJS, the React
yep.
folks at Facebook did. But like back in the day, it was just Tiny MCE and there was, I forget what the other one was. But anyway, so been around a long time and you said just released a new version this week, right?
Yeah, so we've just released Tiny MC5. We started about a year ago on doing a complete UI rewrite with
wow.
a UI framework that we actually wrote ourselves internally, as usual. but we've also done a lot of bug fixes and updates and new features and all kinds of things as part of this. So, yeah, we released that Monday. So that's been a big relief. To get that out.
Yeah. I'm so impressed that a project of that complexity, especially, back 10 years ago, being able to get cross-browser support was so complicated. The fact that TinyMCE has been able to like keep up with the times is just astounding to me.
Yeah. I think that comes down to the people who started it.
Mm-hmm.
The developers who started it are still working on it, and they are amazing people. And everyone else at work that we've brought on and that working there now, everyone is amazing. It's crazy some of the things that we do. But also even just, I think they thought about things like architecture from the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not as much as they would have liked sometimes. We've had to fix a few things here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is very modular. We've been moving more and more towards very nice architecture. So whenever something does go wrong and, you know, Chrome updates and something breaks,
right,
we're able to just go into the module that broke, fix it up, and not touch anything else. And it makes it very nice and easy to maintain everything.
Yeah. So are you still supporting like IE7 or IE9? Like what's
no. the... Thankfully, we're not. Okay. We definitely support IE11. I'm not sure if we still support 10.
Okay.
Even. Particularly as part of TinyMC5, we moved towards much more modern JavaScript and CSS and HTML than we used previously.
Yeah.
That's part of why we wanted to do a UI rewrite. So that did mean we had to drop support for some of the older browsers that we had previously been supporting with TinyMC4.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. I bet there's a lot of polyfill code that got deleted.
Yes, yes. I think we managed to delete an entire library, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
So always nice to do that.
Right. So speaking of rewrites, this is what you talked about at ForwardJS, right?
Yep.
So tell us about how that came about, right? Moving a massive JavaScript code base, you looked at Reason, PureScript, ended up on TypeScript. I'm curious about the organizational side of it. Like, how did you decide to, like, making the decision to move a massive code base to a new language is very expensive and taken with a lot of care, I'm sure. How did that go?
Yeah, so I think it ended up working because we chose TypeScript.
Okay.
A bit of background. TinyMC is over 100,000 lines of code in total. It's also not the only project we converted at that time. So although I couldn't be bothered actually finding how many lines of code we converted, it was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you're trying to do like a full rewrite with that amount of code, you have your entire dev team down for however long it takes.
Totally.
So when we were looking at various languages, we'd been thinking about this for a while. So some of the research on languages had been done a year before we actually did the conversion.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that made us decide that we wanted to do it was actually ES6. Because we'd been wanting to do a language conversion to get types, at least types, in for a while. But, you know, convincing anyone that you need to take all the devs offline for a couple of months to do a rewrite to a different language is hard.
Totally.
But when you can say, we'll do this rewrite, or we'll do this conversion, and we'll do a language with types, and we'll do ES6, that gets a little bit easier.
In terms of the nicer syntax?
Yeah. In particular, the module system, the standard module system.
Oh, right.
We were using our own module system that we had written.
Of course.
And it had a few problems. It wasn't the nicest thing to work with. So we saw that finally there was a standard module system. We could move towards using straight NPM modules, all that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
Much nicer, much cleaner. So we decided to switch to that.
So it ended up being a decision between, like, we'll have to rewrite a bunch of things just to get onto, you know, ES6 imports, and it's not that much farther to add in these types and move to TypeScript.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
So when we had been looking at ReasonML and PureScript, PureScript is actually used by one of the other teams, the cloud services teams, for prototypes. That was how we sort of tested that out. But I'm not sure we have any production code in PureScript. As far as I know, it's only prototypes.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a few of those things just to test out the language, see how it worked with what we did. And we quite like it. We particularly like the side effect tracking, optics, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it has a lot of functional programming features that we just don't need in my team, where we're mostly working with front end.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been a bit of overkill, really, for us to switch to PureScript.
Okay.
So then we also looked at Reason, and We did that by actually rewriting one of the plugins in Reason. This was done 2 years ago, I think.
Okay.
And it's our Power Paste plugin. So it's a premium plugin, and it lets you copy paste content from Microsoft Word into our editor.
Oh. So you're like parsing the XML or whatever that Word produces?
Yeah. So Microsoft Word, if you ever look at the clipboard contents from a Word document, it is HTML and CSS, technically.
Oh, right.
But it's incredibly custom to, like, it's some spec that Word use and they've never released it, so there's no documentation. Put it this way, basically everything is a paragraph styled to look like what it's actually meant to be. And when it's not a paragraph, it's a mess of HTML.
Right, right.
So Power Paste before the rewrite was using regex.
Yeah.
Which is awful. It was incredibly complicated, insane regex. And of course it was buggy because why would you regex HTML?
Right, right.
So that was why that project, that plugin in particular, got chosen for the Reason rewrite, because it was a purely standalone thing. And we could just rewrite the entire thing, and as long as we can transpile to JavaScript, we can just drop it back into the ecosystem and it works.
Sure.
And of course, with something like parsing all the HTML, in Reason, we're able to load that into a data structure, like read it into a data structure, do our manipulations, and then turn the data structure back into HTML.
Okay.
Which is amazing and so much nicer.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So we have, it just reads in, we have this internal, our own data structure for representing Word documents. I haven't had to touch that parsing code too much, because when I did an update to the Power Paste plugin about a year ago, I was adding better list support.
Okay.
Because it turns out lists are rather complicated in Word.
Sure.
And they're a bit of a nightmare to parse.
Because you can do like custom bullet points and all kinds.
Yeah, and you can break a list with a paragraph or an image or basically anything else, and then the numbering needs to continue later.
Oh, right.
You can even continue a list into a table, as I discovered at one point.
Oh, wow.
Which was the crazy edge case that was sort of the last thing I did.
Yeah.
But just being able to, particularly for lists where it's already sort of a tree structure of text, being able to then do that in Reason where we had the pattern matching, we basically use a tree data structure for the entire document. That was really nice. And the fact even that like the syntax is very similar to JavaScript, which is what we write day in, day out. I had done a course on SML.
Okay.
And Haskell at that point. And I read a bit of a Scala book to try and pick up some of the semantics. But I did not do any actual Reason tutorials before starting on this feature project.
Okay.
So, yeah. But I was able to just jump in, start doing it. It took me only a few days, I think, to really figure out the syntax and everything. So it was a really, really good experience. And it's the reason why I, in particular, would really like to start doing more Reason in our products at work when possible.
Well, that's great to hear.
We did that rewrite. That was our test for Reason. It was great. Like, it works really well for what we want with that kind of data manipulation, but it's also a complete rewrite.
Right, yeah.
We would have to actually sit down and rewrite all of the code in Reason if we wanted to go the route of a complete rewrite. And when you have 100,000 lines of code, we were not going to convince management. That was not going to happen.
Right, yeah.
And also at the time, there wasn't quite the tools and compilers and such for Reason that we want before doing too much more. I had a quick look we actually have a channel in our Slack devoted to Reason. Mm-hmm. And I had a quick look through this morning, and even just from like December, we had a conversation where people saying, oh, what's the status on modular implicits and do notation and async await and effect tracking and all this stuff. And we'll sort of like every month or so, everyone sort of checks in and goes, all right, where's Reason at now?
Right.
But back when we were looking at this conversion late 2017, a lot of the tools that exist now, which would make it a lot easier, just didn't exist.
Totally.
We finally looked at TypeScript, and the biggest thing that really caught our attention about that was that vanilla JavaScript is legal TypeScript.
Right.
Which means that you can take existing JavaScript and just wrap it in like the TypeScript structure. And even though you won't have any types by doing that, you then have valid TypeScript.
Right.
So it means that devs can... You only have to spend a little bit of time doing that. And we actually scripted it, which made it even faster and easier. And then devs can just immediately get back to work. And you can have half the team back on normal work, and you can have half the team working on starting to introduce types through all the code.
Totally.
Yeah, because types are optional. So it's the approach is called gradual typing.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally you start with minimal types, you add more as you go. And it just meant that we had minimal initial cost in terms of dev time, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was flexible ongoing cost. So just whenever we have some spare time, someone will sit down and type an entire library or module or whatever. And then sometimes when we're busy because we have a release coming up or something, we don't worry about it for a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of the whole... decision process there.
Right, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, the gradual introduction of types certainly is a lot easier for a large project. At Khan Academy, we have a similar situation. We started using Flow in our web product a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago. But then you run into the situation where you still have a lot of uncovered code, and it can be a little disconcerting sometimes because you feel like, oh yeah, I have types, it'll be fine. And then you get to a place where it's like, I can look at this code and see that there's an error. Why isn't the type checker catching this? Oh, right. Because it's typed any, or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But it is hard to beat the you don't have to rewrite all your code at once value prop.
We actually had, I guess, a bit of an easier time at that because of the architecture of our code.
Okay.
Because we write all our own libraries and things, we have, for example, a library that does DOM manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an entire library that's just data structures, mostly taken from functional programming concepts. But all the common data structures we use are all in one library.
Okay.
And we have a library which does Ajax, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly those first two libraries, they're used in almost everything. Like every other library imports them.
Mm-hmm.
So we... actually went through and we made almost like a dependency tree of what relies on what through all our different libraries and things.
Mm-hmm.
And we, starting with the most commonly depended on libraries, fully typed them.
Okay.
So, yeah, we had someone sit down and so those first two libraries are called Katamari and Sugar. We had someone sit down fairly early on in the project and just spend like a couple of days a week just typing those two.
Mm-hmm.
And then from doing that, we were able to then cascade those types through all the other projects.
Oh, yeah.
And so that alone started catching a lot of problems and a lot of bugs. And particularly because we were cascading through, you do Katamari and Sugar, and then you go to a different project that imported them and fix those type errors and then do another one.
Mm-hmm.
And it meant that we were only fixing the type errors for Katamari and Sugar in these other projects rather than having to type the whole thing all at once.
Yeah.
And it also meant that we sort of... I think if we tried to type everything all at once, we probably would have had to gone back and change things at some point. Because you can't keep in your mind all the code in that big of a code base.
Totally.
You never know exactly what you need. Like, the requirements are just impossible to figure out at that point. Mm-hmm. So by doing the most common dependencies first, cascading those types through, and then doing more common dependencies, cascading those types through, we sort of slowly discovered more of the problems in all of the libraries.
Right.
And we're able to bring that knowledge back to what the next one we were doing. So that really helped. That was definitely something I would recommend if anyone else was going to do this, was try and build a dependency tree if you can and just work from those common dependencies and push things through. It's a much easier experience.
Yeah. And I guess this is a tribute to the having a really well-organized code base, which it sounds like you've got.
Yeah. So particularly because we already had a module system, and we try to keep, even just our files, we try to keep them small-ish. Mm-hmm. Something starts getting too many lines of code, you push it into a new file.
Sure.
So we definitely have a very, very modular structure, and that has helped massively with all this and should help in the future as well, say if we start rewriting more things in Reason, where we'll be able to just replace a library with Reason, and as long as we keep the API the same, it'll all be fine.
Yeah. So more on that. What are the things that are standing in the way of more Reason adoption? Or when you're thinking, oh, you know, it'd be nice to do this module in Reason, but it doesn't have X.
Yeah. These conversations are honestly something that goes over my head a lot.
Okay.
Because I haven't quite done enough research. But I know that there's been worry about, I think it's mainly about the scale of our code,
mm-hmm.
and if we'll be able to keep like the nice architecture, if it will take too long. I know someone keeps asking about monads. That happens a lot.
Right. Well, if you've got people that are excited about PureScript, I'm sure they'll ask about monads.
Yes. Yes, exactly. But I think particularly for us, we would really, really like effect tracking.
Yeah.
I think that's one that's come up a lot.
Yeah.
Just that would help us a lot because we are working... I mean, the entire editor, there is far too much async and side effects.
Right.
And right. all that kind of stuff in a text editor.
Mm-hmm.
You're constantly sending off, like... server requests, or even just you fire an event and hope that whatever's listening to it does it in the next half a second. Or,
right.
We've tried to narrow that down as much as we can, but we haven't managed entirely. So I think there's some work around that area that's being done. I also know that people have been keeping an eye on BuckleScript mm-hmm. quite closely. I think that didn't exist or wasn't mature when they first started talking about these like the language rewrites.
Uh-huh.
And since BuckleScript has developed more, and that's really caught the attention of some of the people at work, so I know they're definitely keeping an eye on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And things like GenType, all the tools that are starting to come out that would help us with the conversion, we're getting to the point where the conversation is becoming less of, oh, what do we need from Reason to be able to do this? It's sort of starting to become, hey, this thing is almost ready. What projects could we potentially do?
Okay.
There's a sort of a running joke in my team at the moment. I've been there for a while, where we'll be working on some particularly complicated, crazy code and be complaining about it, and someone will turn around and go, so when are we going to rewrite this in Reason? But that's becoming less of a joke. At this point,
yeah.
It's becoming more of a serious, hey, we have this code that's, you know, all entirely DOM manipulation or some kind of data manipulation or something, we could actually just split this out and rewrite it in Reason, and it would probably work.
Yeah.
So it's getting pretty close at this point, I must say.
Okay. Yeah, and you mentioned GenType. I'm sure having a Reason plus TypeScript story that's more robust would definitely help out the case.
Yeah, definitely. That could make it interesting now that we've converted other code to TypeScript and we have to factor that in as well. But it definitely looks like Reason community are working on that kind of situation. So that should help.
Yeah. Yeah, because you'd hate to, you know, have nice types in Reason and nice types in TypeScript, and then if you go through JavaScript and not have confidence that they're going to match up with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that was super interesting. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for talking about your experience at Tiny using Reason and TypeScript and the process that you went through.
Okay. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome.